The Tom Woods Show, episode 2323.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, believing that the end of the world might be a bad thing that we should try to avoid is not a Russian talking point. But if we are going to avoid World War III, it's important for Americans to understand what's been left out of the CIA's narrative about Russia and Ukraine. Coming to the rescue here is my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Ukraine. Pick it up at wrongaboutukraine.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, joined today by Aaron Sobchak of the Libertarian Youth Caucus. Is that what it's called?
Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, let's start off with, well, we're going to get to what that is in a minute, but I want to talk about exactly who you are. I'm not going to ask your age, but I presume that if you are speaking for the Libertarian Youth Caucus, you are under 50, would be my think, bare minimum.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here. And yes, so Libertarian Youth Caucus is for those 35 years and younger. So I'm a recent graduate student living here in Florida. And yeah, that's kind of who I am.
Oh, okay. So what part of Florida?
We're in Northeast Florida, about less than an hour west of Jacksonville.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been, of course, been to Jacksonville several times. Okay, so a younger person, I'm curious about in this day and age, how, again, a younger person comes into contact with ideas that are completely, to say they're out of the mainstream is only the tip of the iceberg. So what was your particular story?
So I guess when I was in high school, probably my junior or senior year, election season was turning on or going into full swing. And I think it was 2012 election season. My father was a fan of Ron Paul, although we disagree on a lot of things nowadays. Maybe he's not so much of a Ron Paul fan anymore, but back then he was. And I was convinced ardently back then that, you know, Dad, we just need to support Mitt Romney because he's going to be the nominee and he's who can win and help us conservatives, quote unquote.
All right, and look, Aaron, let me say something. Your father's supposed to be the boomer, and you're supposed to be the Ron Paul supporter.
Well, the lesson he taught me from that was you really should support your conscience and vote for who you agree with the most, and that stuck with me. And then really, very shortly after that, we had a popular Libertarian Senate candidate in Virginia, and then I supported him. And then, of course, in the 2016 election, I was all on board supporting the Libertarian candidates. So he kind of showed me some messages of voting with your conscience and libertarian ideas. And then I'd say the rest are nurtured through listening to Ron Paul and reading from a few authors, things like that.
Well, look, let me put it to you straight here. What a lot of people will say is that's a wonderful luxury to, quote, vote your conscience. But when you cease to be a member of the Libertarian Youth Caucus and you become part of the Libertarian Middle Age Caucus, you come to the conclusion that on this earth, you're never going to get everything you want. You're just not. You're going to try your whole life to convince people to be reasonable and you're going to fail. So you have to be satisfied just to get two or three things that you want. And if you get those two or three things, you're doing better than you have any right to expect. So to go at people with the full-blown libertarian, radical libertarian message in the form of the LP national platform, it's just a non-starter. And so it's lovely to vote your conscience, but meanwhile, people who are actually voting strategically are voting to make your life miserable. And when someday you're in the relocation camp, you'll be consoling yourself, at least I voted my conscience, but you might feel silly at that point. How do you answer an objection like that?
I mean, yeah, libertarian or independent third-party voters get that kind of talk all the time. I would say that, first of all, especially in the 2016 election, I was not voting for somebody who I was 100% on board with. And even Ron Paul, you know, I can't say I support 100% of what he says. So me compromising to vote for a candidate at all, or me voting, means that I'm compromising to vote for any candidate. So just this fact that I'm willing to vote for anybody. So that's one thing. And then the other thing would be, I see that the duopoly, that the current two-party system has been bringing us down the wrong road for quite some time and just continuing to support that and thinking, oh, I'll just compromise in this 99% of my areas as long as I get this little 1% thing they might agree with me on. It's just kind of foolish and utopian to believe that'll actually lead us in the right direction in the long term. So I guess, rewarding that system that's gotten us in so much trouble. That seems kind of silly to me, but I understand a lot of people do have a status quo bias, and there's no changing some people's minds on that.
Well, speaking of changing minds, presumably your particular outreach is to younger people, get them thinking in a libertarian, anti-state way. You know, you would have thought up till somewhat recently that at least young people, one thing you could exploit about them is that they had some kind of an anti-authority streak in them. Because, you know, after all, I'm a rebellious teenager, or I'm a free-thinking, free-spirit college kid. But yet it seems like it's more of an uphill battle than it's ever been. That's my subjective impression. What's yours?
I agree completely. Even scenes like the punk rock scene or the metal scene, people who consider themselves to be on the left who used to reject authority, it seems to me that they only reject authority as long as it's pushing traditional values. They don't reject authority if it's pushing values that they agree with. It is extremely interesting how so many young people embraced COVID lockdown measures and things of that nature. I think some of it comes to do with radical empathy. As long as you can be convinced, or you can convince someone that you're the most empathetic person in an argument, that means you're the most ethical, you're the most right. And then the other part would probably be just social media blasting incorrect ideas of them all day long, and they just go with whatever sounds the best to them or whoever puts the most pressure on them.
Yeah, and that is a bit of a problem because we can't bring to bear that kind of social pressure because we don't have that many people supporting us. And so
that's right.
I don't know. To me, it's just unthinkable that I would look at the state of this society and say, yeah, whatever the popular thing is, or whatever most of the musicians and actors, because I know those are the smartest people in our society, whatever they favor, I better hop on board. That's crazy to me. But maybe it wasn't all that different in the past, but Ron Paul was like a pattern interrupt that, wait a minute, everybody had to, or at least a lot of people had to sit up and take notice because he was so different from everybody else.
Yep.
He was not focus grouped. He was unrehearsed. He was authentic. He was genuine. Everybody knew it. And the trouble is these days we don't really have quite the same thing. I mean, I have sympathies for Ron DeSantis like anybody, but he doesn't have that. No, he would be much more politically successful than Ron Paul, I have no doubt. But he doesn't have that missing ingredient, the absolute radical authenticity. I think he's fairly authentic. I think what you see is what you get. But he's a master, master politician, which is a good thing and a bad thing. And I think Ron had his definite political instincts, but you wouldn't look at him and say, first and foremost, he's a politician.
Mm-hmm. Politicians can't be too honest. And Ron was radically honest and to a fault in that arena. So I think that's certainly part of it.
What was it that made you say, maybe going for Mitt Romney wasn't the best idea that I had back in those days? Was there one thing that hit you?
Well, you know, I do remember watching the presidential debates as a high schooler and not seeing a ton of difference between the two options that were up on the stage. And it made me kind of question who I was going to be supporting or why I would be supporting X, Y, and Z person. My foreign policy, immigration, and a few other policies that I have now weren't really formed back then. So it was harder for me to embrace someone like Ron Paul, who was very different in some of those areas than other Republicans. So, I mean, obviously, we didn't get a chance to see what Mitt Romney would do because he lost. But then I just stuck with the Republican Party for a year or so after that and just kept seeing mediocre establishment Republican one after another lose, and lose even while they're compromising almost everything that Republicans are supposed to value or say that they're supposed to value. So I think once I just saw them continue to lose so much in my state, it made me question if compromising that much was even worth it. And then, like I said, some of my other views began to form and change a little bit to where the natural progression would be towards a libertarian candidate.
Well, you say we don't quite know exactly what Romney would have done because he never got a chance. No question about it. But I think we can make a fairly good guess that he also would have looked to Tony Fauci and, you know.
Oh, with no doubt. No doubt.
All the absolute worst parts of Trump, he actually would have imitated. And any of the remote merits would have been all gone.
Yeah, I can agree with that. His kind of empty virtue signaling towards certain people I found really useless. And like you said, that the worst parts of Trump were there. And if he did half of the things that he said he would do, he would be a very terrible president. But I guess that's probably fair for most presidents.
No, this is a small thing compared to some of the bigger issues out there. But I remember after the presidential election, I don't know what year, but the issue of raising the minimum wage came up. Now, I think probably most people favor raising the minimum wage because they just don't know any better. But Romney favored raising it, just not as much as the Democrats favored it. And that is such a losing position, because once you concede that the market can't set wages, then why shouldn't we raise it to where the Democrats
right.
want?
Yeah. Then, oh, I'm just going to, okay, you want to raise it to $12. The other person wants to raise it to $15. If raising in general is a good idea, I'll just go for the guy who wants to raise it for $15.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
If wage rates are determined arbitrarily, then why not just pick one? Why not just pick a better one? Why not pick this one? I don't quite understand. So in effect, you're kind of conceding, yeah, that there must be some problem with the minimum wage, because I don't want to raise it to that level, but I think it should be higher than where it is. Where is he getting this? Is there some scientific analysis that's telling him that it should be X rather than Y? Of course not.
Well, he never said anything like that. So I think Hayek kind of described political conservatism really well, to just kind of be an opponent to whatever the political liberals were doing or political progressives were doing without much of a standard of their own. And I agree with Hayek, that's not a winning strategy. I think the minimum wage argument that Romney brought forward is a good example of that.
Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you, and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help. for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. So let's get back to our conversation about, quote, young people. I can't help talking about young people, you know, not feeling like an old person. Only old people talk about young people. So I remember being a young person and being told by the young people and all these crazy generalizations made. And I would always think, well, I am an exception to that rule about young people that you just said. But I do think, as we were saying before, that there's an issue these days, and I wonder how much of it is a function of social media. Because social media, I'm not one of those people who thinks it's all bad.
Sure.
There are obviously good things about social media. I mean, I've kept in contact with a lot of people I would otherwise not have been able to stay in contact with, and I've been able to share photos. Like, we all know that. And also, I've been able to spread ideas that are, again, out of the mainstream. And if I hadn't had these platforms, I would have fewer people able to find out what I'm talking about and doing. But I think, at the same time, because it's a worldwide phenomenon, social media, and you instantly see there'll be some news item, you instantly find out what everybody's opinion is of it. And you find out what the official and respectable opinion is of it. So I think it encourages a really, really dangerous and unproductive kind of conformity.
Oh, 100%. I would agree with that. I think our current society, I want to say maybe our very humanist-based society, has thrown away a lot of objective standards. And now the standard is whatever the current cultural view on something is, or the current societal political view on something is. So social media can be extremely beneficial, and nothing against it, but I agree completely that the more and more time that someone spends on social media, just mindlessly scrolling through, they're kind of just subconsciously picking up what their opinion on X, Y, and Z topic should be. And then very often not researching more into it, not really figuring out why they have that opinion, but, oh, you know what? This TikTok told me that I should believe this about Ukraine, the Ukraine war. This is my opinion now. It sounds the most right, sounds the most empathetic. This is what I believe. And then that's how we get conformity, is the most viral opinion on social media takes over.
You know, I'll tell you something. One thing that you would see, of course, there is no middle-age caucus, but if there were, it would, in my experience, consist of everybody sitting around wringing their hands over how much time young people spend on social media. When the correct response is to say, I have no control over how people live. I have no way of influencing the fact that tens of millions of young people use social media all the time. Nothing I do or say is going to change that. So therefore, maybe I should get better at it. Maybe our side should get better at it. We should be making those little videos. You know, we should be doing the things that are getting in front of them instead of saying, oh, what a shame it is that this is where they're getting their opinions.
Yeah, I can agree completely. That's part of why we're here. One thing that we want to do as a caucus is help the party increase their social media presence to match the activities of younger people. Because we do recognize that although this isn't ideal, most younger people do get their political opinions, or at least supplement their political opinions with social media. So every time a new tragedy happens, the same people on Instagram post the same graphics or tweets onto their stories. And we kind of would like to be there to kind of intercept that, or maybe say, no, there's actually a couple of different takes to this. So yeah, instead of just complaining all the time, it should be a call for us to get better at certain things as well.
What are your hopes for the future, for your caucus and for the party, realistically?
Sure. Well, so the caucus exists kind of inside the party realm, inside partisan politics. So we differ from a lot of nonpartisan youth organizations in that our purpose and our hope eventually is to become at the same level or a similar level to like College Republicans, College Democrats. That way, local and national candidates will actually have college support from partisan libertarian organizations or college clubs. So that's our overall goal. And I think that's fairly achievable. If a libertarian candidate can get 5% of the federal vote, then we'd like to have 5% of colleges in the country have active college libertarian or libertarian youth caucus chapters. As for the party, realistically, it's unless we have a candidate who is extremely out there, really captures the cultural zeitgeist, I don't see anything other than incremental or local change. So obviously localism in general is something that libertarians should strive for, in my opinion. So local change is pretty achievable as well, I think, in most cases. And then, of course, just presenting the ideas to the media, being someone different, being a different party than the main two have gotten us into all this trouble, is supporting that idea is kind of what we're there for as well. We just ultimately want people to have an option in an election, a real option that someone who might actually be anti-war or might actually be against the drug war, things like that.
You were telling me in our email exchange that you're a Christian, and that always raises some questions because some libertarians wonder if you can be both, and some Christians wonder if you can be both. And in a way, that's understandable because I think if somebody were to sit down and read the Bible from cover to cover, that person would not walk away saying, the purpose of this book is to promote libertarianism, right? And not that that's what your claim is. But as I say, there are skeptics on both sides of that question. How do you respond to them?
Sure. Well, so I think if you read the Bible and if you subscribe to the Christian worldview, then it creates an enormous argument for the value of human dignity. Human dignity and the fact that we are not slaves to any other person. I think that by itself creates a huge argument for libertarianism. The idea that only God owns you, that no other person can just claim to have authority, therefore they have authority, therefore they own you. And then, of course, when looking at certain passages in scripture that might seem to endorse government authority or government coercion, I would usually respond to that saying that either those verses are not speaking of a coercive state, they're speaking more of just a typical government, which personally, I have no problem with private consensual governments, but it could be speaking about that. Or if it's a verse that says, give unto Caesar what's due to Caesar, I would say, well, what's really due to Caesar? Governments back then, taxes were typically used as either direct services or, you know, as your form of loyalty. So it's much more contractual rather than extortive. So if you don't want to be loyal to Caesar, then you would hypothetically not owe anything to Caesar. Or if you didn't want to use his services, you wouldn't owe anything to him. So I would say overall, the narrative of scripture really lends to the idea of human dignity is against other humans having complete domination over each other. even if a couple of verses may have to be further looked into or further explained.
You mentioned that foreign policy was one of the stumbling blocks you had, and that is true for a lot of people. I mean, I can't tell you how many people in the Ron Paul days, both GOP campaigns, saying, I love Ron Paul except for his foreign policy. And my view was, his foreign policy is the best thing about him.
Like that, yes.
That's the neat part. And I noticed you've actually written a number of pieces on foreign policy on your website.
Oh, yes.
So how did you get from one position to the other?
Yeah, foreign policy is my current expertise in many ways. I got my master's degree in international public policy. And back before then, when I was more or less a neoconservative, I was kind of taught either through the family or just through how I was brought up that Islamic fundamentalists across the country hated us because of our freedoms or because of our religion. And therefore, it made sense for us to be over there stopping them from getting over here. And Ron Paul was someone who introduced me to an alternative way of thinking, even if I didn't completely embrace all of his foreign policy ideas back then. I embraced almost everything else about him, but that was one thing I was iffy on. And then I think having just a few years in between presidential elections allowed me to do some more research. You know, I looked into your friend Scott Horton quite a bit. And you know, anyone who's kind of on the fence about these things and then listens to Scott Horton, in my mind, should be immediately convinced of the libertarian view on foreign policy. And that's kind of what happened, is I just did some more research and maybe came to the conclusion that blowback was real, that they don't hate us for our freedoms. They mainly hate us because we're trying to be over there all the time, trying to change their way of life. So yeah, I would say it was overall just realization and research and study, no specific event per se.
So what is the appeal you want to make to any younger folks listening today?
So, well, if you are a libertarian and you would like to get involved, I believe you should be involved. So that's the first thing, is I believe if you are a libertarian and you're young, reaching out to your friends who are apathetic, who feel chastised by the uber woke or feel don't want to communicate at all or don't want to participate in politics at all. I think it's important to be involved, even if you can't agree on every topic or even if you don't want to take a stance on every topic immediately. For those who are libertarian and are involved, our caucus exists to provide support to students as they are supporting libertarian candidates, big L libertarian candidates, as well as nonpartisan candidates. We want to exist to be a partisan network, almost like a college Republicans network. So if you were at a college campus and frustrated like I was that college Republicans on your campus got thousands of dollars in funding and great speakers and really got all of the support from their parent organizations, well, you didn't have a partisan organization like that, then that's what we're here for ultimately, is to give you that support. And young people in general, you know, if you're not convinced about libertarianism or someone you know isn't, I would just really point out, A, the failures of the state. Any private company would not stay in business after what happened with the COVID situation in most states in the country. And then just the fact that every law is backed by a threat of force, a threat of violence. And if you believe in human dignity, you should at least start to question that.
I would say, incidentally, you mentioned COVID, that was the thing that surprised me the most about the, quote, young people.
Indeed.
Like, these are your lives. These are memories that are irreplaceable, that you'll never get back, that you're actively being deprived of. And you're not even curious enough to do a search on a search engine to see if you can find an alternative point of view. Like, I wonder if maybe these people are wrong, or maybe it's not as grim as they say, or maybe the things that they're recommending don't really work, or you at least look for something. And it seems like they didn't even look. Like, oh yeah, go ahead and take everything that means something to me away. I remember a video clip of high school football players in Connecticut. I mean, Connecticut, it's hopeless. Everything's going to be shut down. Because it's like the more university educated you are, the more of a complete moron you are on COVID. So forget about it.
Yeah.
In Connecticut.
Yep.
But there was this little clip of high school football students chanting, let us play, let us play. And I thought to myself, the adults are going to let you down, kids. And don't ever forget it. Don't ever forget it. They let you down. And there was no reason to, because other places had football and nothing went wrong.
Well, it's unfortunate. I think nowadays, the less a policy makes sense, the more that most young people are going to gravitate towards it. Or maybe not only young people, just the more the cultural opinion is going to drift towards it. It doesn't make any sense that you couldn't be outside playing a sport during a virus. It doesn't make any sense that we couldn't have alternative views or different views on the topic present, regardless of which way you believe it. Doesn't make any sense that some should be censored. And then young people who were, my mom and dad said I had to be back by 11 o'clock tonight. That's dumb. They're dumb. I'm not going to listen to them. Oh, the government says I have to be back in my house by 11 o'clock because of the pandemic. Okay, that makes sense. I'm going to listen to them. It still blows my mind. I think part of it is the radical empathy. Like if you can just prove that you're the most empathetic, or if you are going to be shamed for not looking or speaking in an empathetic way, then you're going to be canceled, at least in that conversation, or your opinion doesn't have value. So I think people are rushing to be the most empathetic or the most virtuous in any given situation. And I think that was part of it. I think that's what fueled part of this. Everyone, we just need to obey them and they know what's best for us and we're going to help save lives. And I think that's what fueled part of it.
Yeah, it's just crazy how lazy that was, that everybody else must not want to save lives. But it's unbelievable how cartoonish the political conversation
is. It works too. That's what's so sad, is that that narrative worked largely. And it's disappointing. It's sad. Part of why I do what I do. But you're right. Oh, I must not care about my grandmother. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't care about your life. You're right.
Yeah. I just want to go out and have a drink and I don't care if my grandmother dies. It's just, you got to be kidding me. And you won't remember
this. I might as well kill you now. Right.
Yeah, yeah. You won't remember this because you're too young. But in 2003, you were told that you were a sympathizer of Saddam Hussein if you weren't for the war. I mean, it was really that level of dumb. You must be for Saddam. No, I don't have to must be anything. I just think this is a stupid idea.
Right. There's no differentiating between different policies, or there's no nuance. It's just you believe this, therefore, ultimately, you're a bad person for these reasons. I think that's part of what's led to a lot of apathy amongst young people, is they just, oh, I can't meet your standards. I'm not even going to try anymore. I'm just going to stay completely out of the political or cultural discussion now.
Yeah.
Or they'll gravitate towards policies that I think are ethically incorrect just because they've been driven that far. They want to upset the other side.
What's your website?
Our website is lycaucus.org.
Okay.
So you can go there to sign up. There's a join now link, a couple donation links. We do have a few articles written up there by yours truly. That's where you can learn more about us, see some of our leadership, learn about some of our active states. We have about 15 active states right now, probably 300 to 400 members in our system. So yeah, go there to learn more.
All right, excellent. I'll have that also posted on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2323. Well, thanks, Aaron. Best of luck to you.
Absolutely, Tom. Thanks for having me again.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.